morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Wearing a hat is my beloved co-host.
That's right. Mike That's Cousin absolutely Tino. Correct. Mike Cousin Tino is here, and Silent Gary is going to be silent today because we took the microphone away.
We took his mic, and we gave him a comfortable chair to sit in.
We are going to get angry this morning. We're going to make people angry.
Well, I don't know.
They're already angry.
We have with us one of our favorite guests, Barbara Luttrell.
Because she knows stuff.
Yeah, because she knows stuff, and she's worn so many different hats, talking about hats, that it's hard to know where to start. She was a Sedona City Council person. She's the head of the mental health, what's that called, Barbara?
The Mental Health Coalition Verde Valley, which was formed about a year and a half ago.
And
it's on the parish council of St. John Vianney Church?
Never. So we're going to be talking about the National Monument again with someone who really knows a lot about it. She's held two meetings, one of which she let end in a fist fight. No. It ended I think if any of you folks are coming in from the internet and stuff, it must seem really crazy that there's this madness about a national monument, because a national monument is not actually going to affect the daily lives of people in Sedona in many ways, unless they're interested in the forest that surrounds the town. There's so many lies and so many distortions that it's hard to know where to start. I do want to read a letter. Now, cowardly folks at Sedona Red Rock News refused to print this letter that I wrote them. They only print anti-monument letters. And this one, I think they didn't really want in. They really wanted this one out for several reasons. And here's what I wrote. It's really very short. If you think the national monument issue is a local one, think again. Keep Sedona Beautiful, which is behind the National Monument area. That's kind of a simplification. Is a small local organization that has worked for decades here in Sedona to preserve our precious national forest. But Sedona has attracted the attention of Americans for Prosperity, a right-wing national organization funded by billionaire Koch brothers and friends. Right before the last city council meeting, where the national monument was to be discussed, robocalls went out to selected Sedona residents, urging them to attend the city council meeting and to voice their opposition to the national monument. The robocalls were announced that they were from Americans for Prosperity. At the council meeting, State Senator Robert Thorpe advocated opposition to the national monument and supported takeover of our precious national forest. He said that the forest land should become productive taxpaying land. He didn't specify whether the forest should be sold or leased. If you are considering whether or not to support the national monument status, pay attention to where the opposition money is coming from. And of course, the Sedona Red Rock News, this was sent on, I believe, September 29th, and they published a whole lot of letters attacking the monument, but they didn't publish this one. And I think the reason they didn't is they don't want people to know the amount of money coming in nationally to oppose the monument. They don't know that on the one hand you have, I think of indigenous organizations to Sedona. I mean, Keep Sedona Beautiful, is it a member of any other organizations, Barbara? Is it?
No, Keep Sedona Beautiful is a 501c3 entity that is dedicated to preserving, you know, the tagline is preserving the wonder, being stewards since 1972.
Since 1972. It's not part of a national conservation group like, say, the Sierra Club. It's
no.
A totally local indigenous organization that was created here in Sedona.
Absolutely.
Local. And what you have is outside money coming in to fight them. Where should we start? Tell us a little bit about the whole process, and you were telling us earlier, we use the, and I guess I've fallen into it too, of saying this is Keep Sedona Beautiful's project, but it actually is more complicated than that.
It is. And I think, you know, Keep Sedona Beautiful is being targeted in a way that is, in my estimation, unfair. You know, when I was on city council, and maybe even just after that, Keep Sedona Beautiful was asked to take a look at the concept of preservation in this area, permanent preservation, because a permanent protection. When we did the community plan, one of the things that most people were interested in was protecting the forests. I mean, people told us above all else, protect our environment. And if you read the community plan, that is in there in numerous places, and it did involve an implementation step which said to pursue ways to protect the land and to protect our environment here. And so, you know, Keep Sedona Beautiful, I think, was a natural organization to say, because they're a local organization, to ask them to take a look at this. And I think that they justifiably went ahead and put together a series, or rather a group of stakeholders who would have an interest in taking a look at this. And so they spent months with this group that represented, I mean, they had members of the Sierra Club, members of the Cycling Coalition, members of Keep Sedona Beautiful itself, members of the Verde Valley Land Preservation Institute. So they had a representative or more from these organizations to take a look at all the angles of this. You know, what is the best way to protect it? And after months of research, they came up with what we previously did, which was a National Scenic Area designation requiring approval by Congress. And they also came up with the other way that other lands have been protected, which included the National Monument designation. And as they reviewed all of the possibilities, the National Monument designation emerged as the most logical process for getting it done this time, because the last time we tried this with the National Scenic Area designation, it became a political football between, you know, the House and the Senate, the Republicans and the Democrats, because there is a faction that does not want to protect and preserve land and federal lands.
There's a very strong faction. There's an industry. If you go on the internet, there's an actual industry. There are a collection of think tanks and like Stratus, who evaluates the energy potential of all national monuments. Like, you know, how can we get oil and gas out of here? How can we get coal? How can we get uranium?
Well, and then KSB, I mean, I think just to come back to the Keep Sedona Beautiful thing, I think it's important to note that it is a coalition, and that's how all of the work has been done and all the materials have been prepared, the Sedona Verde Valley Red Rock Monument Coalition. And so KSB is being singled out as the only organization involved in this. And I think it's a group of people. This is a true grassroots effort. Whether they belong to these organizations or not, they come from a lot of different places here in Sedona and a lot of different interests. And so it is a group of people who have put together a plan for protecting the land. And I think that's where it really needs to be, the coalition.
I think the problem in Congress and the National Scenic Area, the last time it actually got a majority vote in the House, but it didn't pass because it needed a sort of super majority because of the timing. The other thing that in doing my research on it is there have been no, for example, no wilderness acts passed since like 2008. Mm-hmm. And apparently it doesn't matter where you've got Republicans and Democrats both supporting protecting the environment. Even if you have both groups, and even if they're close to a majority in the House and the Senate, they still can't get anything done. It's completely choked up.
It's gridlocked.
Nothing happens.
Yes.
But what's the story on having something declared a national monument?
Well, with the national monument, having done all the research and having put together, which they're working on right now, a request for a proclamation of a national monument, that request, along with a draft management resource plan or management resource recommendations. There are 31 recommendations in the management resource recommendation document. That will be submitted to the Departments of Interior and Agriculture. It's actually the Department of Interior that manages the process, but because the U.S. Forest Service is a segment of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, both of them are involved in this. But it is Interior that will actually do the hearings and the process and so on this. So first you put in the request to have it proclaimed. Then if it goes through the hearings and is so desired and designated, then it is given to the president for a proclamation. Then a 2-3 page proclamation, I mean, I'm looking here at the Agua Fria one for here in Arizona, it's like a 3-page proclamation which simply identifies why we're proclaiming it a national monument and what guidelines will guide it. Then it's given something like 3 years to put together the specific plan that incorporates all those management recommendations and how they will be implemented.
In fact, there are national monuments where this process is going on now.
Exactly.
Where they're working on the plans. And so if something in the proclamation is specifically prohibited, like mining in the area, then it's prohibited, and it would take an act of Congress to start doing uranium mining in an area. But if it's not in there, it's a much more complex thing, and it always seems to protect water rights, grazing rights.
Yes. And every monument can designate the existing rights that may be unique to that monument to be protected. There may be some monuments where mining or timbering in some form or fashion are allowed on some, you know, parts of it or whatever, and they can include that as what is protected.
Instead of the government telling us what to do, it's the people telling the government what to do.
That's the point I was just going to make, Mike, which is really important. That process of the plan, when it is put together over the 3-year period of time, is required to be a community, in this case, community and Forest Service program. Just the way Amendment 12 was done back before 1998. It was approved in 1998, but it was a 2-year process of the Forest Service working with the community until they had something they could all buy into.
So when Mike Schrader takes out a half-page ad in the Red Rock News complaining that all these businesses that had something to do with Keep Sedona Beautiful at one time or another, and therefore our supporters, to stop telling us what to do, it's in error, in my humble opinion.
Well, the management resource plan that would be put together for the monument would be a community-driven plan. We would have more say over it than we actually have even now. So,
and that, which was the point, was what the coalition was charged with, was find a way to preserve. And this is the ways they came up with, the National Scenic Area, the National Monument, at this point, the ways to preserve.
Well, one of the big issues is many, many people do not realize that the forest lands that surround us are federal lands. Right. Many people think they, for some reason, are local lands. And they're always telling, or they're saying, you know, why would you want to give the land to the federal government? They own it. Why would you want the federal government to operate the land? They do operate the land. So that part of information is just, you know, hopefully will get out there clearly.
The land is held in trust for the American people by the federal government. That's what it is. It's basically like their state trust land. There's federal trust land. And these are land that are held for the whole American people. Legally, living next to a national forest doesn't give you any special rights unless there's a complex process where they include stakeholders. But legally, the land belongs basically to the government holding it in trust for the whole American people.
Mm-hmm.
So when something's declared a national monument, it's not a state monument, it's not a local monument, it's not local land, it's not state land, it's not private land, it's federal land owned by the whole American people. And the monument is designated based on its worth for the whole American people. So when you take something like, you could use a lot of examples, but Agua Fria, which is right down the road, and we hear this nonsense about there's always a fence around national monuments. Well, go down and take a look, folks. It's just about, 30, 40 miles down the road. So how did the dialogue get so skewed? How did this become and I, frankly, very vicious attacks on Keep Sedona Beautiful, tracking their tax status, which 90% of what they do has nothing to do with political issue, and the law that they're threatening them with is basically aimed at supporting political
candidates.
Right. So it's absolute nonsense, but I think there's some fear that they could be tied up in legal lawsuits and harassed. What do you think?
You know, that would be an unfortunate consequence of this, and I think we're in a situation where we have such major ideological differences today, both on a national level as well as, unfortunately, we're seeing it now on a local level. I mean, the ideological difference, I mean, about conservation or protection or non-protection, about federal lands or take over federal lands. So you've got this conflict going on a national level and, of course, the southwestern states. And, you know, when I spoke last week where we did the meeting at the OSHA Lifelong Learning Institute, one of the points that I was trying to make is that protection has always been hard. This conflict here right now is not new. You know, going back even in our own state to the Grand Canyon, where, Congress was fighting any kind of protection of the Grand Canyon for years.
And the reason it's been hard is because there are those entities that believe that you can make profit off of public lands.
Totally.
And that's the reason it's hard. So once you realize the reason it's hard, think about the reason people are fighting and lying. I shouldn't say not just fighting. There's nothing wrong with a good discussion. There's nothing wrong with having two sides to an issue. But there is something wrong with one side telling out and out lies. I mean, we can call them other things, fabrications, but mistakes, but they're lying about many of the conditions that are set up to preserve the land around Sedona. That is the point. Everybody says Republican, Democrat, Independent, angry Libertarian, which is, you know, that's the, as far as I'm concerned, the should be the state symbol in Arizona, the angry Libertarian. No government, give me and lock the door, please, behind us. But that's it. You want to preserve the land. Everybody wants to preserve what we have in Sedona, and it's certainly doesn't take genius to see that it's preserve worthy. But we obviously have some disagreement on how to go about it.
Well, I think the first question you ask in establishing a national monument is the land that you want to establish a national monument worth being a national monument?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't have, you know, my old town in Oklahoma, Claremore, the area around Claremore is pretty okay, folks, but it's just not national monument material. And when I look at Sedona, I look at something that's very worthy of the designation.
Well, it's unique, and it's there's so much here. And then we have the Antiquities Act, we have all of that, which was one of the legal methods used to get to that preservation.
And I think with the Antiquities Act, and thanks for bringing that up, Mike, because, you know, going back to the Grand Canyon National Monument, there was a 15-year battle where Congress refused to create a national park. I mean, it goes back to 1893. President Benjamin Harris used his executive powers to create the Grand Canyon Forest Reserve that you mentioned before, Steve. But by 1919, the Grand Canyon was attracting a lot of visitors, and Theodore Roosevelt was really intent on getting it preserved. Our own state senator, Henry Cameron, was intent on privatizing the Grand Canyon. So this battle was going on at that time. And it was Roosevelt that used the Antiquities Act for the first time as a presidential power and authority to be able to designate and protect land. And it was challenged all the way to the Supreme Court, arguing that his move was illegal. And in 1919, it became a national park. And in 1920, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Roosevelt. And each time this has come up and that a president's action has been challenged and gone to the Supreme Court, his right to do this has been protected.
The law was written to overcome congressional bottlenecks, where a few people, even a single senator, could hold up the Declaration and protection
because
of
the Senate
the
was easier to buy off than the president. Henry Cameron, you mentioned, you guys have been to Cameron Trading Post, or
yes,
at least driven by the town of Cameron. If you go in on the East Rim, you have to go through, or you go near Cameron, and I'm sure there was something in his resistance to the national park, national monument, because of his ownership of the entrance.
They had plans to develop and sell the land they were charging fees to go down there. The Grand Canyon is an example of a national monument that went on to become a national park. It's a complex process, and of course, most monuments, there are about 120 national monuments, and none of them have, as far as I can tell, caused any damage to any communities around them. It just doesn't happen. Almost everything you're hearing from opponents of the national monument is sort of going around and collecting complaints. And there's, as Barbara's saying, there's always opposition. There's always the cattlemen always feel that even though their water rights are grandfathered in and they get to keep them, that restrains them in some way.
As you could tell, this morning on Democratic Perspective, we are at least mostly in favor of the national monument. And we believe at least, you're looking at the door to make sure nobody's coming through, we believe at least it deserves an honest discussion where there are other sides to be represented and questions to be answered. I think at the beginning of this, I was getting phone calls regarding questions. Well, what about water rights? What about hunting rights? And what about? And so all of, and I'm afraid that some of the responses were that, well, those will be taken care of. Well, you don't have to worry about that. And that, quite frankly, wasn't a great response. But let's talk a little bit about Barbara, your water rights this morning.
Let's talk about the water rights question. And I think the coalition did continue to say that because in the list of 31 management recommendations, it clearly states that existing water rights will continue to exist.
Right.
And there was a meeting where the opposition brought in a water rights person to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the coalition brought in a person to talk about it. Now, here's what you're going to run into on a regular basis. The person who says that there's a problem with water rights, you have to go and check and see who this person is. And when you do check, and I can't remember the name of the person, but the person who spoke was a mining lobbyist.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you are a mining lobbyist, you are going to bring one perspective to this. If you are a conservationist and the attorney, Judith Dworkin, who spoke for the coalition, you know, indicated that there is no problem with water rights in a national monument. Now, Judith has worked and defended conservation efforts.
Right.
So, you know, even if you brought these two people together, you know, they say when people from two extreme situations come together, they only go deeper in their extreme rather than coming to compromise.
Right.
And so you really have to determine where your own thinking is. And so what I usually try to do is find out who the people are by their backgrounds, mm-hmm. to see who am I going to believe.
Right.
You know, whether it's on, you know, this issue or, you know, other issues that have
been
involved.
Don't ask the barber if you need a haircut. You know, who's going to represent?
Exactly.
Who has the irons in the fire? Who's going to profit from their position?
If you're going to have a rancher come and talk to you about grazing rights and the dangers of grazing rights, and, you know, they did invite Andy Grossetta, who has been the head of the Cattlemen's Association here in Arizona.
Right, yeah, uh-huh.
And, you know, Andy is a wonderful community member. We have to know that if Andy is going to be talking about grazing rights, it's going to have a certain biased perspective.
He wants to be able to graze cattle at $3 at $3 an acre, no less.
When I was on city council, he and his group came asking for us to support a particular project that they had that involved suspending the EPA requirements for 5 years. So, you know, there are special interests. They go back to the Grand Canyon, and every single national monument has met up with the special interests involved in mining and grazing and ranching and all those kinds of efforts for commercial exploitation.
Other thing you can do is you can actually go on the internet and do your own research, and you can look at the water rights issue with national monuments. And so there should be if it's a big problem, there should be a whole trail of legal cases.
Yes.
and ferocious fights and stuff, and there's nothing much there.
That's correct.
When I did research on water rights, basically KSB and the coalition are absolutely telling the truth. It does not really affect anything. The National Monument has no special water rights unless it's part of the declaration of the National Monument. So you can double-check these things if you want to take a little time. Same way with NEPA studies. There should be all these conflicts and people should be out, but they aren't there. There is not the kind of stuff that's being claimed. Now, if you look at national monuments across the country, it's always the same rhetoric of development versus conservation. The monument can be considered up north of us for the Grand Canyon watershed. There was a long article where a guy was arguing all these different reasons not to have the monument declared. And then at the end, there was a long thing about how much uranium mining would bring to the town of Kingman. So, it's usually about money and rights. And in Sedona, it seems almost more ideological. I know that many of the New Age folks do commercial tours without permission of the Forest Service into the forest, and they don't want any monitoring or anything that will interfere with their activities. I don't think they make a ton of money. They do build structures. I like the things that they build in the forest, except that, you know, if you're the National Forest Service, what's your basis for allowing
medicine wheels
rather than something else? You can't make an exception. So there are ways to check a lot of this. What would you say is the most significant thing?
Well, we need the
medicine. We can say about this whole process, because, you know, here we have a newspaper which did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 editorials attacking the National Monument that won't print newsletters. I mean, won't print letters that support it.
Right.
The bias is so extreme. I mean, when I first looked at the Sedona Red Rock News editorials, the first one was, this one does not solve the fire issue. In other words, it doesn't. But no national monuments have ever been designed to solve the issue of forest fires. It's a red herring. It's something that's irrelevant to the whole process of the Forest Service. Secondly, you can't show that the monument would increase the chances of a forest fire. If anything, what happens is the Forest Service wants to have some sort of rigorous national criteria for forest fires, for the kind of cue of what's the most important for forest fires. Having an area called a national monument can only help. And it can't help logically and legally, but it helps politically. As the former governor in, I think, 2006, Janet Napolitano got the forest fire here in Sedona. She lobbied to have it raised in the issues in that stack of forest fire. She got it brought to number one, and it got the forest fire fought more strongly. So there's a political aspect that the monument would only help. Can you guarantee anything? No. But to ask the monument to be in itself a solution to wildfires, the only solution really is national spending to prevent wildfires, and that's what's not happening.
Well, but also let's talk about the reason for the National Monument consideration.
Good.
And that is land trades. Sedona was built on many land trades, and that went on for a lot of years till 1998, when Amendment 12 was passed as an amendment to the forest plan, because the community was really upset about land trades and said no more. And so Amendment 12 was put together with the community, and it was passed. And now here we are, 17 years later, the new forest plan is being put in place. It's the draft is already written, and so there is no more Amendment 12, because now parts of it are incorporated into the actual plan itself. But there's a huge difference. When Amendment 12 was written, It was prescriptive. It said no land trades from outside the area. You could still do the land trades inside the area. And that's still true in the New Forest Plan. However, Amendment 12 was prescriptive. It said no land trades from outside the area. In the Forest Plan now, because the Superior Court ruling of, or Supreme Court ruling of 2005 said forest plans had to be aspirational and more general and more strategic. And so the New Forest Plan only lists no land trades as a desired condition, not a required condition. That's a huge difference. So the National Monument is really a tool for making permanent the protection against land trades. That's the heart of it.
That's
okay,
a very
Barbara,
big deal.
But people say, but people say there is no danger of land trades and that it's a phony issue. That's the one argument from the opposition.
Well, I think when you look at what went on with the Ruskin land trade, which was a debated for a long time in this area back when I first moved here around 2002, 2003, where they wanted to have land on 17 near Camp Verde traded for some land up in up beyond Flagstaff and that whole area. It was a huge controversy. And that was a land trade that was going to happen. And it was going to happen because it was within the area. It was going to happen behind closed doors as a handshake between John McCain, Fred Ruskin, who was a major contributor to the McCain campaigns. And so land trades can happen behind closed doors as a handshake. Now, they've been forbidden, if you will, proscribed by the Amendment 12. But in the New Forest Plan, that's not a restriction that has the force of law. So, you know, land trades can happen without public process. They can happen with just a handshake behind closed doors. And I know there are others in Arizona that have gone on pretty much the same way.
That's really important because a lot of supporters of preservation believe that Amendment 12 was still around and still going to be in force. And although at the moment I guess it's still around, I don't know when the Coconino plan actually takes effect.
Well, it's pretty much, yeah, it's moved. It's not in effect yet, but it's moving along pretty well. But the other part of it is our own representatives have been involved in sponsoring bills in the Arizona legislature to attempt to have Arizona claim federal lands as state lands and to take over the federal lands and be able to, I mean, Bob Thorpe has talked about that.
Yes. What was interesting is that it was started out as kind of a local debate, and we had the New Age folks who want to use the forest for their own reasons. And we had what I call bad actors in Sedona, perennially crazy people as another group. One woman in my neighborhood was hysterical about running a 2K race through our neighborhood, and it was going to be the end of the world. She was being deprived of her rights. The firemen couldn't save us if her house burned down and all this. So there's those crazies. And then there's the realtors, and the realtors have always opposed everything.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Really?
Because even when we did National Scenic Area, there are lots of realtors who signed the petition who supported it. It's the real estate management, the board.
Yes.
Which on a national basis rarely favors protection, but favors production, land in production. But individual realtors recognize the value of preserving
land. That's true, and I talked to realtors about that. But the Realtors Association came out against the National Scenic Areas.
The association, yes.
The association did. The leadership did. Every single time they've tried to protect the area, and they're out against the National Monument again this time. They testified in Congress against the monument. They were the only people really testifying against the National Scenic Area. So that was the usual thing. And then what's happened is the libertarians, and they're sort of called the crazy right of libertarians, not sort of normal libertarians, and the Tea Party saw an opportunity to come in. And so then we have national money pouring in. We have robocalls, as I mentioned in my letter. We have all the rest of it. So it's become extraordinarily politicized, and it's a fairly vicious, the stuff on the internet attacking KSB, which is a little local organization, is pretty astonishing. The arguments against the monument, you know, are just a load of, can I say that, Tom? Load of crap? Yeah, they're just a bunch of crap. I mean, there is no requirement of fences around National Monument. They're not going to seize land. It's not going to increase the use of sewers in Sedona.
I'm looking here at a document that was put out by opponents to the National Monument, and they're listing like 12 reasons and a lot of other paragraphs related to why a National Monument is really going to be bad for people, you know. And it's taking a certain approach that I think we need to address, because it is saying things like, you know, do you want to increase traffic and maintenance of our current infrastructure without any immediate or future compensation? Do you want to retain our volunteers and budget for park services and upkeep? We have the money, the feds have none. Do you want to keep our freedom to repair, clean up, and walk or drive to any trails? Do you want to keep our freedom? And so on and so forth. And so what this whole thing is doing, and, you know, we have responded to each of these because it is all about fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And the entire campaign is designed to create fear on the part of people, whether it's fear that your house is going to lose value or gain value and you're not going to be able to afford to stay there, you're not going to be able to walk your dog on national forest land. It's all about fear. And when I read all of these points that they are making, they're designed to scare people, yes, into opposing it without looking at the facts, because every one of these has a fact beyond it that says that's not the case.
Correct. It's all fear-based, and it was very successful. I mean, it says something bad, I guess, about our community, but also about the country, that so much fear-based nonsense could get out. They convinced Jeep drivers they were not going to be able to do Jeep tours. When I said to one of the guys, I said, you know, who was part of the more rational hippie side of the opposition, he said, well, the Park Service will take over. I don't know why they hate the Park Service, but they do. And I said, no, they won't. I mean, it's going to be the Forest Service is going to be managing the monument. And then I went and looked, and since the Clinton administration, there are no national monuments that have been managed by one of the federal agencies that change.
Right.
They're, you know, if it's BLM land, it's BLM. If it's BLM and Forest Service, then it's BLM and Forest Service. They don't – why would they bring in the Park Service to run an area that they don't know anything about?
Correct. And I think there are 9 national monuments that are managed by the U.S. Forest Service, and they continue to be managed by the U.S. Forest Service.
The newspaper had the newspaper had this editorial which said, and the reason you can't have a national monument here is that the Forest Service is only, they finally figured out that the Forest Service is going to manage the thing, is only managing 9. What kind of an argument? Well, suppose they managed 10, then would it be okay? Can you look and see whether they're doing a good job managing the national forest within budgetary restraints? All you have to do is take a look.
Right.
But this is kind of nonsense, not just by crazies on the internet, but by the Sedona Red Rock News.
Well, that's the other thing I heard from more than one person and caller, was that the coalition, which includes KSB, didn't do any public process, didn't do any public meetings. We're talking about the KSB and the coalition did meetings every Thursday at 1 p.m. since early July. They had activities in the newspaper, the radio, on Facebook, their website, and at the public meetings. So, yes, like a lot of things, the public process wasn't particularly noticed by people that didn't care. They went on with their lives. But they had plenty of public opportunities for public input, and continue to have opportunities for public input. I want to get this. Ann Kirkpatrick was in town yesterday. Some people talked to her about this. At least they got to address their representative with some of these issues. That she was at the DORR, the Democrats of the Red Rocks. Supporter of our show, and we want to talk about the DOR breakfast coming up this Thursday at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill. Stan Williams, Assistant Executive Director of the Arizona Advocacy Network, is going to talk about various, is this just the electoral justice and the political rights and civil participation? Is that, do I have this close, Gary? Anyway, the speaker at the Door Breakfast this Thursday, 8:30, October 15th, Old Sedona Bar and Grill, will be Stan Williams, the Assistant Executive Director of the Arizona Advocacy Network. Come and talk about, or at least listen to, some of these things and have a good breakfast and rub shoulders with these commie socialist punks that are trying to take your land from you.
So, Barbara, they're, you know, the Sedona Verde Valley Red Rock National Monument is only one of the monuments kind of being proposed.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get that? How do you get that? Push it forward when you have monuments that are set up to prevent more uranium. Now, the way this works, folks, is if you have a uranium mine near the Grand Canyon, you got a uranium mine. There's pretty much nothing that can be done about it. What a proposal up at the monument, protecting the monument's watershed, will prevent any new uranium mining. One of the arguments against this monument is there's no mining here, for example, to protect against. And there are not large economic interests. There's not oil and gas industry, and there's not uranium and coal mining. Why is this such an intensely fought issue? When we don't have, we have the realtors who usually are doing their things, the Realtors Association.
Well, it's a knee-jerk thing. If any land taken out of private hands and put in public hands is bad, period.
Yeah. But why such an intense fight here? Frankly, folks, if you go around and go on the Internet and you look at the arguments back and forth about national monuments proposed or created, There's always the developmental people who are always unhappy and always trying to stop stuff, and there are conservationists who are always unhappy because the monuments never go far enough. You know, so that's how the conflict kind of works. We've got 3 minutes left, Barbara. Why don't you sum up for us? We put in our plug for our Door Breakfast. So you've got 2 minutes and 39 seconds.
Okay, if it's as good as the picnic was, it'll be a terrific breakfast. And you always have good speakers.
You know,
I think in this particular area, at this particular time in our political scenario, we're facing a unique situation, and that is the desire to take over federal lands. I mean, it has been gaining steam, and, you know, even looking at some of the recent articles, Arizona could claim as much as 25 million acres, all federal land in the state, except for military bases, Indian reservations, national parks, and some wilderness areas. Okay, but eyes are set on taking the federal land for privatization. And it has said very specifically that it's for economic development. So, you know, while people may be expressing fear about whether or not they're going to be able to walk their dogs on the national forest, or whether, you know, they are concerned about water rights, those things can all be answered. But I think the bigger question right now is, if we are really serious about protecting the land around Sedona, then we need to step up now, because it is federal land and there are sites set on it for privatization, and we need to be able to act for future generations. You know, even when I've spoken on this before, I said, you know, when you look at the tradition of Theodore Roosevelt and James Muir, and they did it in spite of the controversy, we just need to be brave and courageous and continue to follow through on this and include the public. I mean, I realize it's really hard to get the information into everybody's hands. Everyone I know that has talked with me or met with me and asked questions comes away feeling like this, the fear is gone. And I think we can't live in fear. We have to look and say, learn the facts and take action.
Great way to put it. Please leave your firearms at home, however. We follow the, there are still numerous public meetings going on about the National Monument, about its history. Ollie had the Osher Lifelong Learning had a thing the other day. Don't forget, you can hear this and all our shows of Democratic Perspective on VVID.org. VVID.org has our podcasts, and this show will be up in a couple of days, and including a wonderful synopsis written by Silent Gary, who will take all... And Bill Timmerman, take all this information. VVID.org. Thanks, folks. Democratic Perspective.
Thank you for being with us.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.